Good evening, this is Gary Kavanagh here on the right side on Gripped. I'm here today with my friend and colleague Michael Dwyer. Today is the 16th of the 9th, and there are a number of stories we want to very quickly discuss. The first of those is that we want to touch on a Guardian editorial which was written about David Cameron. Just really want to run through that one quickly. And then also New York, which had previously banned conversion therapy, which is a form of therapy designed to change someone's sexual inclination, generally from homosexual to heterosexual. Highly controversial treatment. New York has now moved to remove the ban on conversion therapy. So let's go to the Guardian editorial on David Cameron. Now, this is a very small thing. It's just something to be aware of. David Cameron has been doing a sort of a please forgive me tour, I would say, around British media. And as part of that, he's been talking about the loss of his son. For those who don't know, David Cameron had a young son called Ivan, who had not epilepsy, something that was causing repeated seizures. And his child died of that, I think at the age of 6 or 8.
He was six. And in fact, he was born with what we would call a life-limiting condition. And I think that at the time, the doctors said to the Camerons that Ivan would live to around his 6th birthday. And that was what, in fact, eventuated. He died, I think, while David Cameron was Prime Minister. I'm not sure, but I remember this, the case. It was known that his child was ill. And it was heartbreaking, I mean, for the Camerons, and they were obviously struck. This is a really nasty piece of work. I mean, I don't get it. It's written without any real sense of empathy. I suppose we wouldn't be talking about this at all, Gary, if this was just somebody writing under a byline and an opinion piece or columns. But it's an editorial.
It's an editorial thing. And just to let you tell people what the editorial says, they're talking about the death of Cameron's son. And that what they say is this: Mr. Cameron has known pain and failure in his life, but it has always been limited failure and privileged pain. Even his experience of the NHS, which looked after his severely disabled son, has been that of the better functioning and better funded parts of the system. Had he been forced to wrestle with the understaffed and overmanaged hospitals of much of England, or had he been trying to get the system to look after a dying parent rather than a dying child, he might have understood a little of the damage that his policies have done. So again, David Cameron's son died slowly and painfully. And to the Guardian, that is a privileged form of pain.
I don't know what that means. It's just a nonsense phrase for a start. Privileged pain.
I think, obviously, look, it's a single editorial. But I think the interesting thing about it is that it aligns with a lot of what we're seeing with sort of the more hard left and the progressive left. There is this decreasing empathy for people on opposite sides from them. And this is not new. I mean, what was it, when Margaret Thatcher died, Ding Dong, The Witch is Dead becomes number one bestseller in England. I mean, they're just generally unpleasant people.
It's what's rather sad is that this is something that this polarization of ideological politics has been something which has been happening in the United States for the last 50 years, and it's been measured. I mean, we know that from social attitudes, which were being measured back, say, the 1960s in the United States on questions like, how bothered would you be if your girlfriend had a Democrat/Republican boyfriend, or if Democrats/Republicans moved in next door, and how likely would you be to have a friend or close friends who were Democrats/Republicans? And the social interactions, which would have been completely normal for people in, say, the 50s or 60s, are becoming less and less normal. Do you remember there was people of the left of the United States, 20% of them felt it would be better if the people on the other side just simply didn't exist.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah. I'm pretty sure that explicitly said died.
Pretty horrible. There's a line here in this which I wanted to advert to as well, which is not just simply about the loss of the child, but, for example, Yeah.
Is this the boarding school life?
Boarding school at seven are entirely real and for some people emotionally crippling. But they come with an assurance that only important people can suffer that way. If you're a seven-year-old child, I don't understand. I mean, that in normal circumstances where you don't have family breakdown or distances or illness or death, why two people who have decided to have a child will decide at the same time to send that child away at the age of six or seven to a prep school? I don't get that. I do. There's part of me that does believe that were they not wealthy, that they would be investigated for child abuse. I saw a fascinating documentary about this many, many years ago. There was one moment where they were talking about their experience of prep school, the individuals and their siblings. And there was a moment of comedy, well, I think you would appreciate it, a rather black comedy, where one man has been saying he hated it, absolutely hated it, and it never left him. And his brother or sister saying, yeah, Tim, it was very odd. Every year when he was going back to school, he would scream and shout and cry, and he'd literally have to be picked up and bound and dragged into the car, or put into the car and then put onto the train. There was a silence. We never did work out what that was about. It might be every year when we was going to school, he would do this, but we never worked out what it was about. If you're a seven-year-old child who thinks they've been abandoned by their parents, what the fuck? I'm sorry, what does it mean to say that it comes with an assurance that only important people can suffer that way? This is fairly sick and twisted thinking, that you're now projecting the notion of privilege onto a tortured seven-year-old child. And in some way, you see, Gary, in that sentence, is there some sense of a justification for something, that this is why we can treat them in a certain way, or this is why we can look at them in a certain way? We are justified in hating, because this, even if they are racked with pain and scarring and emotional problems, oh, they're still important, that somehow they were compensated. It's weird. I don't know who wrote this, but I would love them. You know those tests you do, generalized psychometric tests? I think it would be very interesting to see this, to see what the outcomes for this person would be.
Well, I mean, it's a Guardian editorial, a massive newspaper, so you're probably talking like two or three editors having eyes on that thing.
And nobody said, you know what, lads, maybe not, maybe not, let's not do it.
It is just, you know, years ago you'd run into the odd, really hardline, generally communist, and they would just have no sympathy at all for the bourgeoisie or for anyone they thought owned the means of production, anyone upper class. And it didn't matter what happened. There was just no sympathy. That seems to have just kind of encompassed a great deal of the progressives and the left now. And they've just become joyless bastards in general. It's like dealing with Calvinists constantly.
Sick, psychotic comparison in that sentence, where he said if he'd been trying to look after a dying parent rather than a dying child. Which is like saying, oh yeah, okay, the child was dying, but you know, if his mother or father had been dying, it would have been, you know, he would have found things really tough.
There is a general sort of, well, he didn't really suffer.
Not enough. Not like other people. I mean,
David Cameron is a rich white man. He can't actually suffer. Not like these other people. He's actually kind of racist.
As I say, I would like to see the psychometric testing done on whoever wrote this thing. I mean, to say something which is fairly obvious, I mean, even though not nice, I mean, of course, it is the natural state of affairs in human life for us to lose our parents. and different. If you lose your parents when very young, it's a terrible tragedy. It's always sad to lose a parent. Well, for the vast majority of people, it's sad to lose a parent. But I think generally it's accepted across culture that when the natural order of life is inverted and parents have to bury their child, that there is a peculiar tragedy to that. And for a parent to see their child die in front of them and to be incapable of helping is incapable of taking their pain on, and is a horrible thing. And yet here it somehow is diminished to make a small point about the National Health Service. It's nasty and it's sick and it's unpleasant. But there you go. That's the Guardian for you in this year of our Lord, 2019.
So, from the Guardian to gay conversion therapy. Michael, you can take the lead on this one.
There's all sorts of nonsense. I mean, it is a positive joy of nonsenses, the whole the gay conversion therapy discussion, because everybody around it who actually talks about it or gets excited about it talks nonsense. They don't work. Just doesn't, full stop. I mean, and people can tell you, oh, well, I read a story about a guy in Idaho. No. Yeah, the guy in Idaho, after 6 months, and if the psychotherapy and the drugs have worn off, is sneaking into the back of the cowboy bar again. On the other hand, there is a deep incoherence, it seems to me, on the left regarding this. Because if you're a person like me, I'm what they call an essentialist when it comes to sexual orientation. I believe you are, in some sense, born with a certain orientation, that you have a genetic predisposition, and then it's most likely certain things are turned on or turned off due to hormonal influences in utero during pregnancy. And baby arrives either fabulous or unfabulous. Now, that is generally speaking rejected as a way of looking at sexuality by our friends on the progressive left, Gary, because they think that sexuality is fluid and it's on a spectrum, and you know, none of us are really men or women or gay or straight. We can be whatever we choose to be. You know, we make life choices. This is my lifestyle. This is my life choice, which is bullshit, because I never met a gay man who ever said, I sat down when I was 16 and I said, that looks like the lifestyle for me.
Show an image of someone with two whiteboards in front of them.
Yeah.
Each one with a set of genitalia painted on a pro and cons list, and a sort of, where am I going with this?
That's what I got.
We've run the cost benefit.
However, if it is the case that they believe that it is actually that your sexual orientation is the result of a series of social interactions and the accretion of social behaviours, well then, if that's the case, surely it can be unpicked using psychotherapy, analysis, possibly drugs, I don't know.
That's the thing I also find weird about this. When it was a more essentialist, you're born that way thing, well then, yeah, gay conversion therapy could do nothing. But now that we've gone into sexuality as purely socialization and personal choice, by that metric, gay conversion therapy should work. Or at least have an impact.
And you used that wonderful word, choice, personal choice. If the dude or the dudette in they were speaking about has decided that they would, for whatever reasons, make the choice that they would rather be straight rather than gay, well, whose business is it if they're making that choice freely? Why would you pass a law to do something which I think is impossible, but you don't? I mean, your world, in your psychosociological world, this, because you're talking about orientation as something which is fluid and socially formed, it can presumably therefore be changed. And people are free to make choices. This person wants to make that choice. What's your business in telling them they can't make that choice?
There is a little bit of, Yes, it's a choice, but that's not the right choice.
Not the right choice. Not the choice you should be making. It's a positive, life-affirming choice. And also the fact is that most of these people doing these conversion therapies are organized, are tend to be from Christian backgrounds, evangelicals or whatever, and a lot of this stuff involves kind of psychic prayer. It's a mixture of sort of how do you feel about that, and let's sit around and hold hands and pray
for it. Are we suggesting that a more, let's say, cognitive behavioral therapy approach to conversion therapy would be more effective?
Effective? I don't know if it'd be more effective or not. I don't think it'd be effective at all. Probably our friends on the left should maybe believe that it should be effective, but I think they would still think it was a bad thing. And they would want to know. I mean, there are...
Surely that would depend why they're doing it.
Yeah. How many genders exist now? I mean, I don't know.
I believe 72.
Including unicorn. Really, if you believe this stuff, you believe that there are 72 genders, and yet you're going to come along and criticize the science behind conversion therapy. You're going to allow people to make the choice to identify as a cat, but you won't allow them to, out of their own free will, go and spend their hard-earned dollars on becoming something that they want to be. Now, if somebody wants to transform themselves into a cat, you've seen that there's a number of these people around the world spend tens of thousands of dollars mm-hmm. on plastic surgery and other things in order to become physically... Right. Yeah, that's okay, but this is not... I think it's a nonsense. I think if you're looking at situations where you're talking about young people, teenagers, whatever, or people who are being forced to go under this kind of therapy because their parents and their community and their church don't want them to be like that, then I think that's a bad thing, and I think that should be stopped. But if you're talking about adult people who are making free choices, you know, as long as they're not giving them drugs that are going to fuck their livers up or something, I don't know.
No one would do that to their child,
Michael. No, no.
To score political
Nobody
points.
Would do that to them.
We would never see such a thing where the state looks away while children are given drugs that will more than likely permanently sterilise them due to a social fad.
No, I think that's the kind of thing.
Oh,
that's
no.
The kind of thing Margaret Atwood would write about in some kind of horrible dystopian future, where 5 and 6 year olds were given some kind of hormonal treatment in order to fundamentally transform the way they develop, and then leave them physically damaged, emotionally wrecked, sterile, and incapable of forming attachments or families in their 20s. That kind of thing. No, Gary, thank God we don't leave in that world.
We can be glad of that. What I am actually looking forward to with a deal of anticipation is when they start to produce tests that can test for sexual orientation in the womb.
Yeah, we've...
Because I'm going to really enjoy when the abortion debate becomes that.
Well, we've been talking about, myself and others in this situation, I've been talking about that for a long, long time. And I've often made the observation, which I believe to be true, that when that happens... The best place to go cruising for a date will be the Catholic churches and the evangelicals, because it's only the Catholics and the evangelicals will be having gay kids. Everybody else, oh, I don't know. Do we want a gay one? We won't have any grandchildren. I don't know. It seems like a lot of hassle. No, maybe not. We'll try again.
What's the phrase we sometimes run into? A life not worth living. Think of all the things they can't do. Children are just... Yeah, they could be bullied. Maybe it's best we not subject someone to that.
Yeah.
I will never be for the parents. It will always be
child.
For
Absolutely.
The child.
Yeah.
Of course, it's only for the child. No one would ever dream anything else than that you just want some sort of easier life.
No. Again, thank God we don't live in that kind of world. That would be
the view of a pessimist.
Oh. Or somebody who was alive... Anyway, I suppose we shall be back on Wednesday.
Wednesday, yes. Yes, Wednesday.
Shall we? And hopefully the lovely weather will have continued and we shall all be down by the beach in the interim period. But until then, I don't know about you, Gary, but I'm going to go and I'm going to say goodbye.
All the best.
Bye-bye.